Hello, welcome to the big show. Yes, we are here to do the thing that we're supposed to do. Sorry about last week. I had a bit of an outage with, or an intermittency with my internet connection, but brand new router on Monday, solved the problem. Well done, Virgin Media, for rising to the occasion and sorting it out. And thanks to Patrice for diving in and fantastically saving the day, running both shows, which I've now published. So I made up some show titles. They may not apply to the show at all, but who knows? That's the fun of the game.
Exactly.
Joining me to discuss the big stories on the week in tech, Alistair's back. How you doing, mate?
Well, I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Good to see the weather's improved by you.
Yeah, it's finally stopped raining. It was like when we were doing the pub quiz last night. By the way, it was absolutely tipping it down. I can't tell you. And you all sat there with the sunshine in the background and all this. Oh, very God. Jealous. Anyway.
I do like a networking group, and I went to join a group in Seattle. It was surreal, I have to say. everybody clapped after the end of it because we're all on Zoom. Everyone just sits there and does like a jazz hands wave, or they do this like clicking your fingers thing. Don't know what that means. It's spirit wave, they call this.
Right.
And it's surreal, man.
Are we going to do that?
No, let's not.
No. Okay, well, I was going to say that my big news of the week was I finally managed to get out because all the shops have opened, apart from the restaurants and the bars.
Nice.
And I got a haircut.
Very good. Oh, I hadn't noticed. Yeah. Sorry.
So, well, I don't have much hair, but it was untidy. Oh, well, so now it's tidy. I have a haircut.
It's a good-looking haircut.
At an actual barber's. Brilliant.
Superb. Socially distanced, was it? So it's like a pair of shears on the end of some sticks.
Oh, it was such a pain in the neck for the poor guy having to come with gloves on, and we both had to have the masks. At a certain point, he was cutting around, you know, the back of my ear, and he just snipped the strap on the mask.
You've got long hair, you know, where the strap marks were.
You know, I was spent one time holding the remains of this crappy mask on, and you know. But yeah, no, it was trouble for him, not for me. So
it's
big
still
tip.
Serious. People are still getting it, so we've got to be careful. Yep. We're back in the studio next week for definite. Next to him, the person that saved the day, Patrice.
Hi.
Yeah. Well done, mate.
Yeah, it was like I think I did okay. Like it definitely wasn't the same quality or anything that you usually put on, but
it's all right, mate. No one listens. Somehow.
Yeah, well, I hope not, but like it was fun. Like it was a really fun show, like both films.
Well, no, we got content out. That's all that matters. Thank you very much.
You were definitely missed.
Oh, that's sweet of you, mate. Yeah. We'll do it then, don't worry. We're back next time. I'm looking forward to getting the studio because I'll have me stream deck, and mind you, I'll get down there and probably none of it will work. Something's crapped out and I haven't noticed.
Probably, yeah.
Joining us as well for the first time in a few weeks, Mr. Green.
Hello, friend.
How the devil are you, boy?
Well, as you know, I broke my leg.
Yeah, but like I said to you, mate, we've had this conversation just before we started. At least you did it the proper way. You were doing something really frigging stupid. You weren't. It wasn't like I stubbed my toe and I broke my leg. It's like I was going hell for leather on a bike down a hill.
Yeah. The amazing thing is, I don't know about... what's going on now? Has it come back again?
Yeah, I got you. Go on.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the bruising and stuff that affects you after, and all the sort of pain that you think, well, I didn't hit there, but my willy turned purple, and that was you don't see that every day. Willy and my ball bag, they both turned purple.
Did they swell though? That's the important part.
No, they didn't really. They got smaller, if anything.
Have you got anything for the pain, but make sure it doesn't take the swelling away?
Yeah, no, it's they're getting better. and being sort of, because I couldn't walk for 2 or 3 weeks or anything, I got piles and all sorts of horrible stuff. More horrible stuff than I'd like to go into. But Yeah. So the purple willy was a bit of a, you don't see that every day.
Well, we've got the first half. We've got the first half of the show title. Well, good to have you with us, mate. So glad you could make it because we missed you last week. They could have done with you. There was only 3 of them.
I don't think I got an invite, did I?
Yeah, you did. It's the one you've been clicking for 20 minutes that you didn't get in on.
Oh, right.
Nice try, mate. And last but by no means late, least, the late Jeff Garrett. Not dead, just late.
Just late.
But you did tell us you were going to be late, so that's...
I did, yes. And I was a little later than I expected, but here I am.
You should always tell us if you're going to be late, because then we won't sit here worrying you've been eaten by a mountain lion.
You know, a shark. That's
oh,
you know, if I have a problem with the shark here.
No, so Jeff, we've got a rival for the Boulder Big Cat Report.
Saw the video of the shark swimming alongside the boats at the dock.
Yeah, Alistair has had sharks in his bay.
Yeah, that was it. Yeah, well, not my bay, but yeah. Didn't, not far from here.
Yeah, didn't we talk about sharks in Colorado last week? I feel like we did.
Yes, we that's did. The same story. The
show. Yeah. That's why I was begging you guys for a show title, because I haven't had time to listen to the show because I couldn't download it until yesterday. Mm. So, and even then it didn't work properly. So we're there. We're sorted. Week.
I interrupted.
No, it's fine. We know Jeff's all right because we spoke to him earlier on. He did tell us a rather harrowing story about walking through a wooded area and then him realizing halfway through that it was pitch black and it was perfect big cat ambush country. But you'll have to listen to the Max show to get the rest of that story. It's worth it, though. Well worth it. The big stories in tech, the week in tech, all the things that have gone on. It's been a bit quiet on the Apple front, but there's some other stuff to go on and talk about, definitely. So who's going to start us off with the first story and say they know what that was? Patrice, look at that. God.
Wow.
I've never seen Patrice have the fastest fingers in the West.
Oh, no, I have.
I mean, that was fast.
Well played.
So
the fresh sea breeze, tell us more.
Yeah, so basically, like, if you're walking around, like, somewhere, well, at least alone right now at the beach, so not happening in Colorado, but maybe Alistair can do that, and you take, like, a really nice whiff of that sea breeze, you might actually be breathing in microplastics, at least according to some researchers that have been taking air samples. So yeah, it's very unhealthy, I would say, and also not very pleasant. You might not smell it, but it's definitely not good for your health to breathe in plastic, because I mean, yeah, that never goes away. It just like stays in your lungs.
But you're only going to get accumulation if you live by the sea, aren't you? So
I mean, like, if you're like whatever visiting,
you're not going to get enough if you go for a 2-week holiday with Auntie May.
Yeah, no, I mean, maybe if you do it for 100 years every year, maybe maybe that might be enough, but then I mean, something else might kill you, like the shark might kill you before, so
yeah. I'm not going near the sea because of the enormous shark that's there chewing through people, or exactly. I'm not going there because a shark. I like the shark. It's the microplastics that are killing me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, well,
they're just opening up the beaches this weekend because they knew the weather was going to be good. And if they didn't open up the beaches down here, people would go anyway and have to arrest half of France. But since we're all going to have to wear surgical masks anyway, I think we're probably okay with the microplastics.
Mate, yeah, you've got to see those suntans are going to be superb.
It's like the inverted panda.
A whole new set of white bits.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Like yeah, some crazy...
The three pieces.
I was going to say, we're all going to like the Joker, yeah.
Yeah,
big wide.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, like the microplastics, it's definitely an issue. Like, it's an issue in our water supply. It's definitely an issue in our oceans, and like it's pretty hard to do anything about. I mean, other than filtering all the ocean water, which is, I mean, as you can imagine, a lot.
Well, and the level of filtering, because if you talk about microplastics, you are talking about stuff which is invisible to the human eye.
Yeah, yeah, it's tiny. I mean, otherwise you wouldn't be able to breathe it in. Like if it was a big piece of plastic, you wouldn't breathe that in.
Yeah, I mean, what sort of micron size are we talking here? Because you're talking about 1 to 10 microns to get into the deep base of the lung, and you're talking about everything over 50 microns not making the respiratory system at all. So it's got to be between 50 and 10, and that all gets caught at the top.
It's all kinds of sizes. I mean, it's from as far as I've understood, from really really small to somewhat bigger. It's simply, it's all the plastic that's in the ocean that slowly breaks down or falls apart. I mean, it doesn't, is that it?
Forgive my skepticism here, Patrice, but the particle size is critical as to how far it gets into your respiratory system, isn't it? So
it might be. That said, like the thing is, it is probably different sizes at different times, depending on how long it has been in the ocean. So yeah, just I think like the sizes any pollution,
are given at, yeah. they're given at the beginning of the last paragraph there. Super tiny. There we go.
Ah, that tiny. Yeah, got you. Yeah.
Okay, that's more than just tiny, but it's not mega tiny.
50 micrometers or more won't float in air, so you can't inhale it anyway. Everything from 50 micrometers to 20 gets caught in the mouth. Mm-hmm. 20 to 10 is caught in the bronchioles, and then 10 below is a possibility, and only one gets into the respiratory, right into the alveoli. I'm digging up my occupational hygiene training from 20 years ago.
Good, very good. You still remember that.
Impressive.
I've got tons of shit that just pours out of me that I forget. Some stuff I don't even know how I know it, but...
But then you can't remember what you ate yesterday, right?
Who? God awful. Yeah. I hate being old. We were going on about glasses earlier on today, and Tom was like, I've been wearing glasses 50 years, I don't want to wear them anymore. And when I was going blind slowly, it was like, okay, I had reading glasses, but then the rest of the time I was fine. And I was kept putting them on, and I said, Sharon, I just want to be blind. I just want to have to wear glasses. I don't want to have to take them off and put them on. Take them off and put them on. That pissing me off. And then as soon as I had to wear them all the time, of course, it was like,
I have to wear glasses all the time.
Yeah. Guess what you wish for? It was like Aladdin moment. Yeah, there you go. You're totally blind. Good.
Aladdin was blind?
Well, I don't know if that was one of his wishes or not, but I don't think he did pick glasses. But if he had, he'd have picked Hoyas.
I'm sure he would.
The oceans have got loads of problems with microplastics because they've got some of the plankton level kind of stuff, but just little super tiny fish that the next ones feed on. They're taking in microplastics and stuff like that. There's a guy who's famously photographed seabirds, and their carcasses have decayed, and where they've decayed, there's just a pile of plastic where their stomachs have slowly opened out. So,
yeah,
it is a big issue.
Yeah, we're seeing that a lot.
But I mean, is microplastics a way of the ocean absorbing it eventually, though? We'll end up just with a fine film of microplastic across the whole of the planet.
I would expect the latter. It's not going to sink down. I think it's too.
No, well, it's too lighter than water. That. Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just going to be on top. I mean, until we stop polluting it, polluting the oceans, and then it gets all eaten. But
yeah, but it's got like a million year decay rate, hasn't it?
Exactly. So, well, it might get all eaten. Like animals might just eat it up eventually. But it's
it'll work its way back into the water system anyhow.
Yeah, that's true.
Because we'll eat it. We'll eat the animals. Then we'll shit it out.
Yep, that's true.
Then we'll filter it, and it'll be too small to filter, so it'll go back into the water.
Yep. Yeah. And even if we could filter, there's still stuff that's going to get through because there's all the stuff that happens outside of our filtration system.
We don't want to filter out everything because there's also useful stuff that we would filter out. So
yeah,
it's a big problem. Yeah, it's a big problem that nobody really thinks about. I mean, we think about all the debris in space that we're dealing with, and we're thinking about like global warming or like climate change and all of that. Some people are thinking about the trash heap in the ocean, definitely, but like I've heard very little about microplastics until very recently.
Well, the microplastic stuff was like the little beads that were in your face washes and stuff like that. They got rid of all of those, didn't they? But the microplastics, I knew about them degrading. I've seen pictures of David Attenborough's thing or something about little tiny fish eating the really, really tiny stuff. But
they found a lot of animals that like basically were filled with those plastic.
Yeah.
And it's not the big the straws or whatever.
Great stories kick us off there, Patrice, mate. Yeah. God, that's at the tempo, isn't it?
Yeah, good. But now we can talk about Jeff's.
Yeah, which
Jeff, I'm impressed, mate. You've picked a story about France.
I did.
Was that good? Is that an honor of Alistair?
Yeah, or maybe something for Alistair to be aware of. But you probably already know about this.
Yes.
But yeah, so there's a law that's been passed in France that requires that that websites, when they have been alerted or notified of illegal content, that they must remove the content from the website within an hour?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then there are fines, and if they have repeated offenses, those fines could be 4% of the company's global revenue, which for some companies, that's probably enough. To put them in a serious financial situation and potentially ruin the company.
Yeah.
So it doesn't differentiate between small websites and big websites. So let's say you have a company that has content that's going out, and somehow something that violates this law in France ends up in there, then you get a notification at, say, 10 o'clock at night, but you don't see the notification until 7 o'clock the next morning, you're in violation. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but I don't think that's a major problem. I think the elephant in the room here is not the activity of monitoring your own website and controlling erroneous content. It's the definition of terrorist content.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we've got people at the moment where they stand up and they say, I've got a bomb in the middle of a shopping precinct when they haven't, and they're charged with terrorism offences, which is fairly clear cut. I don't have much of a problem with it. But when you start getting into what's a terrorist post, I hate America. Well, maybe you do hate America, and it's perfectly okay to hate America.
Right. Or if someone makes a comment about burning their flag.
I don't think it's a case of just asking the average person whether or not they think someone having a rant online is terrorist or not. The people who will be notifying the social media companies will be the terrorist experts in government. So they'll have already made those.
Are you sure about that?
Well,
but even then, it's not.
They're not going to ask me, are they? I mean, they will make their own value judgment whether it's right or wrong, but I don't think it's quite as random as you make it sound. I've had the arguments before about one man's freedom fighter is another terrorist. That's plainly not true.
There are
no fine lines there.
Once you give this power to a government, the government has the power to wield it fairly or unfairly.
They decide,
and that's the trouble.
They decide what is terrorist content and what is not.
They're choosing what to take down, and if they say, okay, well, that's something that's anti-governmental, therefore we'll define it as terrorism and take it down. The definition is the crucial element, because otherwise you've got a government run amok, mate. Yeah. I'm all for democracy, and I'm all for control of people that are being arseholes.
Yeah,
you've got to be careful that you only control the arseholes.
Yeah, as well as a democracy, it's also there's a legal system in Western countries, so... even governments, when they wield the law.
The legal system is about balancing and checking the government. It's not about the government controlling the legal system, which, if you're not careful, that's what you end up with. You give the power to a government, and if there is no judicial oversight as to what that is, then they wield it unfairly and unrestrictedly. Mm. And that's what bothers me with this.
Mm.
Yeah, be careful.
it's as if there's absolutely no recourse to come back on.
There has to be a definition to which everyone can look at and go, it is or it is not. It can't be down to an expert going, it is, because that then becomes you pay the expert. So therefore the expert decides what you tell him to, or the expert has a justified, influence upon it because of the fact they have a credible bias by it. It's, there's no,
Yeah.
Yes, but I really don't see what the difference is between this and what's happening in other countries, including the UK, other than the fact that you put a time of 1 hour on it. This
because it's about the definition. Well, it's the definition that's
taking,
the key.
People, yeah, but it's same in the UK. People are taking down terrorist websites all the time.
Yeah, I know. But the point is that you then start to say, well, what is and what is not terrorism is the definition of the problem, not whether you take it down within an hour. Because I think it's perfectly acceptable to say, right, if we've identified something that clearly is, and it's an objective definition of what terrorism is, if we tell you to take it down, you will take it down.
Mm. Yeah.
And every company has to look at that and go, yeah, we agree, because the definition is so clear that our interpretation and your interpretation are coinciding. Mm. That's the key part.
I agree. You need to have a very clear definition.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just imagine, let's say there is a government like with a leader that is very self-centered, and he just defines that everything that like anything anybody says that is against him is terrorist.
Well, then you get into the derivations of the fact of you've got a communist or you know, a militant right-wing government, and you end up with anything that's posted that then becomes communism. I mean, you're into McCarthyism then at that point, as opposed to open and freedom of speech.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm trying to work out is what's different in this story from what already happens everywhere now.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing with. I'm not saying I wasn't suggesting it's a French problem. I'm suggesting
It's just there are definitions problem. Of is that child sexual abuse or is it libertarianism? I mean, there are.
I really hope that we got that one sorted.
Yeah, well, I think that it is very straightforward. I mean, it's surprisingly how few fine lines there are. And I think if it's abused, there's the opportunity. I think, as far as I'm aware, there remains the opportunity to kick back.
Well, I mean, your own story that Jess posted, since 2015, we've already had such a law that allows the police to ask for removal of content if they deem it terrorist. This has been used multiple times in French to censor political content, the spokesman said.
No.
Given the police such a power without control is obviously us for an infringement of our ability and freedom of speech.
Well, it's like when Tony Blair had that heckler chucked out of conference once. I mean, you know, and he was dragged out by the police on terrorist grounds, and all he said, he did just shout out rubbish from the balcony. And I mean, there's always that. What I thought was striking about this story was the 1 hour. I think the Register ran this story, and their their subheading was something like "Good luck with that."
Yeah, I think that is a hard one, because I mean, you know, I've been waiting on the phone for an hour.
Well, yeah, it'll take you more than an hour to get through to someone who.
And if you're saying it's just if it's a one way, we sent an email an hour ago, so why haven't you done it? Well, I'm sorry, but. Yeah. I found two emails today in my spam that from 2 weeks ago that someone chased me up for. I was like, oh, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, it's clearly targeting the big, like really big companies that they can respond in an hour. I mean, Google, YouTube,
I'm not
Twitter,
sure
Facebook.
That they can at the moment. I know that everyone's working from home, but they just don't have the same access to the same systems and everything. I mean, the requests for getting people to take stuff down at the moment, especially the fake news, is taking longer than ever for that to filter through, because everyone's like doing it on their own.
Yeah, but I mean, those are, my point is, those are global companies. They work 24/7. They can deal with that.
They can. They have this. They have the budget to apply staff to this department. In
exactly.
Commerce. Yeah.
The problem is, I think, bigger for the smaller guys. Like they could, like smaller website or startups that could get caught up in this, that don't have the means to do it. I think that's a bigger problem.
Well, you're also saying, well, if you're going to start up a web division that allows people to post content, you're going to have to put in there an infrastructure which allows you to remove content at short notice, which is inappropriate.
But I mean. But that makes it very, very hard for anybody to compete with the bigger guys. Like, I mean, nobody could create a new, better social network than Twitter, because you simply, like, you would need a lot of money to do that. So it's kind of on the other hand, you don't have much to lose if you get caught. That's probably the other issue. Like, if you make no money at all, then 4% of nothing is nothing. Like,
Oh, I think the fines start at 1.25 million and then go up to 4% of global.
So that is a problem then. I thought it was only 4%.
No, failure to remove the content attracts a fine of 1.25 million euros, 1.1 million pounds. France's regulator has the ability to impose fines of up to 4% of global turnover for continuous and repeated violations. So it's not you're not going to get that. It's not your first offence.
Yeah. I mean, I was reading this in the papers this morning, and what I was reading was as vague as this of, you know, social media and other websites. Okay, so who are you contacting? The host, the domain,
the poster,
the bod who's behind info at. Mm-hmm. I mean, who are you going to hold accountable? That's very vague. I don't quite see.
That's a really good question.
Yeah, you might
someone
send
who's
email.
Just installed the WordPress or something or what?
Yeah, you might send the email to info at and simply say, "Well, we notified you."
They filled out the website feedback form.
Oh, or that, yeah.
Or contact us form.
Yeah.
Some crappy JavaScript doesn't work. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like we informed you. Like, not our problem that you didn't get it.
Yeah, I wonder who they'll hold to account.
That's me. Sorry.
No. What I mean is the process of a whole vague or convoluted process to communicate. That's Vogon.
Yeah. In 1 hour.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, well, we put the notice for you on display in a file cabinet in the basement behind a locked door with a tiger guarding it. It's not our fault that you didn't go read the public notice.
You know what that reminds me of? Hitchhiker's Guide. Well, the notice has been in the posted in the office in whatever galaxy for 50 years.
So they got waylaid. The mountain lions and sharks have ganged up.
It's a conspiracy.
We set a mountain lion around with the notice in its teeth. Oh, I never saw that. Well, there's a surprise.
Yeah. It
seems
so
reasonable
well
legislation to me. It does seem reasonable, Bob says, and I don't have a problem with the intent of what it's doing. I just have a problem with when you're breaching it. That's the key part. Because at the moment, you know, you look at photographers. I'm speaking from my own viewpoint here as well, I suppose. When you look at photographers taking pictures in public, you know, you've had police approach people and say, "Oh, you can't take a picture here," and it's just like, "Yeah, I can. I'm in a public space. You can sod off." And then get arrested for it, and the real abuse of power. And it's not abuse in the sense of I'm trying to abuse the power to the point that I can then coerce something from you. I don't understand the power that I have, and that's where it really gets dangerous.
Yes.
Good story, mate. Even if Alison doesn't agree.
No.
It's okay, because it's Alison's story. Go ahead, mate.
Oh, my story. Oh, it was just... if you click on the link, there's a Guardian page, Guardian story this morning about BuzzFeed closing down its UK and some other operations. And I know it's a small thing and it's not really IT or anything, but, you know, BuzzFeed was going to be the big disruptor. It was so innovative and different. And it's a website that carries news, which no one has ever heard or thought of doing before.
Yeah.
So completely groundbreaking, and they were going to make zillions and zillions of money, and they had famous parties. And I was trying earlier, just beforehand, trying to find the quote from the boss who was, you know, he said, "You don't need a trade union here because you'll all have jobs for life." And, you know, he did one of those things, you know, no one ever gets, gets sacked or loses money by investing in IBM. You know, it's that kind of thing. And it's just all come down on their heads, or rather. And what's annoying is that, you know, I mean, they haven't done anything badly in that sense. They had to furlough most of the staff in the UK, but it looks like once their furlough's over, they're going to be made redundant anyway. And if I can put another link in, you might want to look at this on more of a press angle. The Press Gazette's actually listed the names of the staff who've been furloughed, and it includes a couple of award winners. So not the Pulitzer Prize winner, because they were in the States, but Emily Duggan, who won the Private Eye Paul Foote Award last year, and also someone who's won, you know, a, British Journalism Award as well. They're in this list and they could end up being jobless. Well, they'll go freelance, obviously, but it all seems a bit of a shame, but there's this kind of terrible feeling of inevitability about it because there was just this waft of bollocks about the whole thing. It is ultimately, a news site. On the other hand, it's news and information is and websites and stuff is exactly what everyone's turning to at the moment, especially if they can't go out and buy an old-fashioned paper newspaper. People would never have thought of using their phone to look at news. They're now doing it. There's never been a greater demand for online information.
Did BuzzFeed shoot themselves in the foot, though? Because BuzzFeed, did they shoot themselves in the foot? Because the problem you always got was that whether it was light on content and high on page turning.
Yeah. Now,
you get one story that'd be across 20 frigging pages. I'm exaggerating. Yeah, but you get a story that'd be across multiple pages. You're like, oh, just write a column for Christ's sake.
Yeah. Now, to be fair to them, they launched at a time when, say, Mail Online was still starting up. And Mail Online had the same thing. It focused on celebrities, bikini shots on the beach and stuff like this, because that grabs people, and BuzzFeed saw a market in that and they were right. And it was only later they thought, what if we just got some proper journalists instead of just doing a bunch of listicles? Maybe we could get some, and they started investing in long form journalism and investigative reporting, which was interesting because only Sunday newspapers do that in Britain. So there's a real kind of contribution there. And they had their ups and downs and, some bad subs would copy and paste from other sites. That always happens everywhere. Everyone does that. But ultimately, it was just so completely not innovative, not groundbreaking, and not disruptive because it was all based on advertising, which is exactly the same as everybody else. Yeah. So... the same reason that lots of news sites and lots of newspapers are having to kind of furlough staff, lay people off, cut back. It's because of advertising. And I always, this kind of confusion here because everyone's sitting down staring at, news sites and watching TV. And you've got this huge market ready to look at advertising, and the advertising has all been stopped. It doesn't make any sense. I could never be a businessman. I'm just not stupid enough. It's just so moronic. And it's also not just BuzzFeed. I mean, let me have a look. I was also looking, if I just add another one, Quartz is also in trouble. So it's going to close its London office. Who else was I looking at? Vice Media. Let me just add that one in. Also, it's going to cut 155 jobs worldwide. These are all companies going, ooh, we had a news operation. And it's all based on advertising. No one thought outside the box here. Yep. And the funny stuff is some of them are saying, well, we're going to cut back on all this. And we're just, at the same time, our subscription services are getting more popular. So these ultimate disruptors have gone back to the concept of people paying to get their news.
Wow.
Which is, I don't know if that's a continuing thing. If the advertising market doesn't come back soon, that may continue because people will pay if you give them the opportunity to pay. If it's free, you can't sustain it. Obviously, it doesn't make any financial sense. Even I know that. Mm. Investors don't know it because they're all stupid, but...
I pay
Sunday times. Yeah, exactly.
And the Saturday times.
Yep, that's us.
And I mean, if you compare it to something like news.google.com, which is basically aggregate stories from all different sources, and you link through, I haven't seen myself a reduction in advertising because you get those incredibly annoying pop-ups and so forth. I think if anything, that it's the slowing down the browser with all the
I was going to say advertising is bad for the internet, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And for instance, the Daily Mail pops up and it's going to be full of advertising and pop-ups and I think I'll book it. I won't read it. And then I installed a Chrome extension to stop the advertising pop-ups. Mm-hmm. But then the sites moan at you. It says, "Oh, we see you've got an mm-hmm. advertising pop-up, but advertising is how we make our money."
Yeah, I mean, this is not new. Like advertising on the web, there was advertising in newspapers before. Like the difference is it didn't slow down your newspaper. I mean, it might have been annoying because like some space was simply taken up by advertising, but it didn't slow it down. I personally don't have an issue with advertising per se. It depends on what it is. Like, I mean, what it does and what it is. I mean, there's annoying advertising and bad advertising, like some advertising something that I'm not interested in. And there's good advertising, and advertising can be incredibly useful. I mean, as someone who like has released products and is working on products all the time, advertising can be incredibly useful to like expose what you're doing to people that would be interested in it. So it can be useful and it can be helpful, but it has to be done right. And unfortunately, we've gone, I think in a lot of areas, we've gone in the wrong direction.
Yeah, I mean, if I do obviously look at sort of news online content, the BBC mm-hmm. and news.google.com. But if I really want a like proper news, I'll mm-hmm. buy a magazine or I'll buy a newspaper. And it's old school. So I think in those instances, when it comes to, say, a magazine, and I subscribe mm-hmm. to a few and it gets delivered to my door, the advertising can be quite valuable because you think, oh, actually, I'm interested in that. And that's a product I want to buy. But with the scourge of the internet, as we've seen, all of these pop-ups and the clickbait
stuff. The advertising's got to be, do you want to know more? It's not, it mm-hmm. can't be, I'm telling you more regardless. That's
yeah. Yes.
Great.
Yeah. It doesn't give you that option in most
exactly.
Yeah. Well, it depends. I mean, Ewan, we've talked about that like you had some really good, I think, Instagram advertisement, and I have had that too, where it's like, okay, this was actually like, it was interesting. It was good. It was something like that I found valuable, and it wasn't in my face. I had to absolutely like click it away.
Yeah, but I could scroll past it if I wanted.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's good advertising. Like it worked. It worked, and it provided a service to you. Even.
There's an interesting thing at the moment with the. I've got a video game that I downloaded off Instagram. Actually, a pool game, and I actually really enjoy playing it. It's a great little mm-hmm. game, and it's not hard. But it, you know, I've learned a lot about controlling the cue ball and stuff like that off it, and it's really cool. And it works on advertising. So every time I play a frame, it plays me an advert. And if I go offline, it doesn't matter. I still get the advert. Mm. So it's worked a way around that. But it's kind of like I'm sitting there playing it. It's a crappy little game that just runs on the same engine repeatedly with a few different table layouts. And it's like, well, that's not that hard to code. If you said to me, what's the value of that at a bulk sale, it's $4.99. I'm sold. I buy it and it's done. Mm. But it will not let me. It won't let me stop at. It won't let you give them any money. There's no subscription to it. There is no way of stopping the adverts. They haven't. All they want is the advertising model. They don't want me to give them any money.
Yeah.
Mm. And I can't fathom that one out, because it's just like at some point I'm going to go, well, bollocks, I'm not going to play it anymore because it's annoying me too much. Mm. Whereas if they'd have thought about it, you know, I'd have gladly, it's a simple little game, $2.99, $4.99 for a simple little game, have me money. Don't care. Mm. And there'll be a billion people like me. Mm. But the advertising model
that they put together probably showed them that they will make more money in the long run mm-hmm. with just advertising. Mm-hmm. And you'll get tired of the game and you'll quit playing it.
But someone else will step in.
Someone else will step in.
Yeah, I think it's also their support costs are a lot less. So people who haven't had to pay for anything complain less. No. So you just, if they don't like it, they can go away.
Just as much.
Less, but not zero. I think the other thing with news in general is it's also about quality. Like, I mean, like Will said, like for certain things he's willing to pay. But you don't like, I mean, I'm just going to pick out, I don't know, Business Insider, for example. Like, I'm not sure I would even want to pay for that, because the quality is simply not there. Like, it's like what I would get for my money is, I mean, and that's a personal thing. Like, someone else might have a completely different view on it. But like, there are a lot of news websites and news outlets there where I'm going to say the quality is like across the board, simply not there. And I'm not like highbrow, whatever, like content quality, but like really like, whoever wrote that, I mean, I had a podcast about that. Like, whoever wrote the stories spent maybe 2 minutes on it. Like, a crappy clickbait headline and like one paragraph and a picture and a link to another website. And that's it. And they call that news. So, and I would never pay for that. Like, not in a million years, because it's simply, there's no value in what they do.
Yeah, it just bugs me that all these disruptors came in about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Disrupted the market. People who had newspapers, magazines, and a paid subscription or per issue model went bust, and now they're all kind of withdrawing back into their little holes again, saying, "Well, that's what we're going to do." What they've got is so much worse than what we had before.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's definitely a problem.
Yeah, it's a shame.
States, we have a very serious problem, because our entire media industry in this country is crumbling for multiple reasons. The traditional news, your print news market, they didn't take advantage of the technology when they should have to be able to tailor the advertising to users. And they just stuck with the same model they had previously, which is you buy an ad in the newspaper and everyone sees the same ad. And then that let companies like Facebook and Google become these big powerhouses for information. Mm-hmm. And so that's been a problem. Another problem we have is that there are these companies in the United States that are going around buying up the various publications and then dismantling them and selling off the parts. And so we just simply don't have news. Like, the big news publications in Colorado are gone. Mm-hmm. And they'd been here for over 100 years, which in the United States is a big thing. And now we have a new model that's trying to get hold, which is the subscription model, where if you want the news, you pay for the news. And so we have a new newspaper called the Colorado Sun, and it's employee owned, and it's a subscription for the whole thing. And they're looking at this from a different perspective, which is the people that find value in this will pay for the value. Yeah. And but then you have companies like BuzzFeed, which looked at what Google and Facebook are doing and tried to figure out how to implement that model. And it's a mess, because it isn't drawing in the revenue that these companies need to survive. Mm-hmm. And so now we have this problem where we have the old school traditional publications that are just folding. And then we have the new publications, but like BuzzFeed and Vice, where now they're in the same boat. There's just not the money.
Yeah. It's also like I think the other thing is, I mean, I've seen, like, I was a long time subscriber of the magazine. I don't know whether you remember that, Jeff. That was like for a while, Glenn Fleischman had the magazine.
Oh, and it was really good. The magazine was wonderful.
Yeah, it was wonderful. And like, ultimately it didn't work out, because I think it was for the most part not the content that was actually pretty good. It was that it had to compete with three. And if you're competing with three, it is very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So,
I mean, to your point, like, it's like the existing outlets came in too late, and at that point, free had already taken hold. Like, it was already like there were already enough news outlets, new ones, or even like, I mean, bloggers that started up, like Daring Firewall or whatever. They were offering their stuff for free. I mean, at first without ads, and then starting with like very targeted sometimes advertisement. Or, I mean, I know like Daring Fireball, for example, is doing reasonably well, like with very targeted advertisement. Mm-hmm. But it's also a small operation. Like it's very, very lean. Like you can do that on like a bigger scale, and like, I mean, having like really big, also big stories. I mean, you have to remember like big stories and big quality stories take money. Like it doesn't come for free. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you can only do if you have a certain subscriber base. And I think that was like a big problem, that basically the internet came in, everything was offered for free, and everything else crumbled. And now we're back to square one. We're trying to figure out, and it's very, very difficult. I mean, we saw that on the App Store and on both iOS and Android. It's very, very difficult to compete with free. If someone is willing to do it for free, and it somehow, to some extent, gets the job done, like even if it's not the same quality-wise, even if it's like...
Of course, if there was a food bank on every street corner, why would I go shopping?
Yeah, exactly. Even if the food wasn't as good, but like if it fed you,
I think the real innovation in the journalist market now, though, would be to actually write a factual story. That would be a huge innovation at the moment, because the COVID-19 thing has really shown what a crap standard of journalism there is in the general mainstream media. The spinning of news rather than the reporting of news has taken place. At the moment, they're all going on. This week has been, I've really got switched off from Twitter because I'm so pissed off with it. Mm-hmm. Matt Lucas makes a little video that takes the piss out of Boris for go to work, don't go to work, stay at home, but go to work, but stay at home. And okay, that's funny. And I laughed at it, and that's all it was. But then everyone thinks that is what he was saying. And it's like, hang on, am I the only intelligent person in Britain? Because I totally got what he was saying.
Yeah.
Stay at home.
This is the same guy that made the potato song.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. He's well up there in terms of world politics. He's well up there.
Yeah.
But no, that's the thing. That's all he did was he made a thing that was just a parody of what was going on, and it's fine. But people have taken it as the gospel truth that what Johnson said was in any way conflictive and confusing. Mm. And it's not. And then I watched the thing the other day where a guy's saying, you know, we haven't got anything wrong. I get people talking to me all the time in the supermarket. I go to the shopping and people recognize me and they talk to me about what the government's doing and what the standards are and all that kind of stuff. And Susanna Reid on GM2 said, so you're meeting people at the supermarket. Tell me you haven't gone out to meet people at the supermarket. And he's an MP. People recognize him. They talk to him at the supermarket. Mm-hmm. Why are you trying to make this into something it isn't? That is shit journalism. And your show is utter toilet water at this point.
Well, broadcast journalism is very different anyway.
Even print journalism is getting, certainly online journalism is awful for just getting getting a rise out of someone with a headline and then talking absolute bollocks.
If I was writing a story about government, I wouldn't, get on a train and go to Westminster Station and then start typing, well, I'm standing out here outside. I mean, I wouldn't do that if this was print or written journalism. I'm just saying broadcast journalism has its own stupid ideas of how they're supposed to talk to MPs and what they're supposed to do. Yes, I'm standing on the top of it. Why are you standing on top of there? You could have done it from the studio.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. Anyway, look, the other part of this story wasn't so much what's happened to news, but this idea of advertising is you've got this massive captive audience are indoors staring at screens 24 hours a day. Why are the advertisers freezing all the contracts with their agencies? To me, it doesn't make any sense. And it can't be because they think people have got less money, but it's just what economies do, isn't it? They say, oh, there's a problem ahead. We better make it worse quickly. And everyone does weird stuff.
I'm going to argue with that
Well, you see, another issue with everyone being at home and being forced to work from home is it's an IT management nightmare. So people are getting suffering from more phishing, or there are more phishing attempts than there ever were before.
Yep.
And there are all sorts of kind of problems. People aren't running their VPNs to get back to the server in the office and so on. Mm. And would you believe it? I've just put another little link in. The number of IT jobs is also being slashed back, including security.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, it makes perfect sense. More people are using the internet more than ever before. They need more support than ever before. Let's lay off some staff. And I just cannot make any sense of it. It's just, I would never be able to run a business. Well, you know, I think this is
just
stupid
take issue.
Thing to do.
I've got Bob in the chat room here. The issue is there's probably far too many news sites. Totally agree with that. Bound to be some consolidation at some point. Okay, that's a good point. Yeah. Bob's put the Guardian, the BBC, and the Channel 4 News have been excellent throughout. I've got a couple of issues with that. I don't read the Guardian, so if I took the Guardian, then I'd be able to issue an opinion, but I haven't. Channel 4, they've got Krishnan Guru Murphy on there, who is the biggest asshole that you've ever met on the planet. And there's a word that was invented for him with four letters, begins with C, and I won't use it, but he is absolutely through and through that person. Mm. And the BBC wanted to report about, there's confusion at the moment and that kind of stuff. The day after Boris's speech, when he gave the briefing, they waited till Kunzberg had asked her question, which is their reporter on the briefing, and then they cut away back to Fiona Bruce in the studio, and they started to analyse what was being said in the briefing. And they want to talk about confusion and people not being clear. Mm. They cut the bloke off after 10 minutes while he's still doing his press conference. To go and talk bollocks about what he hadn't even said.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, give over, man. You can't do that. That's, if you're going to report the facts, don't report the shite.
Yeah, to Alistair's point about advertising and about IT staff, I think it's a little bit more like nuanced, the whole topic, because there are certain industries. I mean, like, I'm lucky, I'm in the medical field, like we're busy as always. But there are certain industries that are really struggling right now, and they had to let go people, and they had to cut back advertising money because simply the company is like struggling for money. Like they're trying to keep as many people on, or at least the good companies are trying to keep as many people on as they can. So they have to cut, like if no money comes in, then like something has to give. So I think that's part of the thing. I'm hiring right now, and I'm seeing definitely a lot. Yeah.
That's the long. We could go back 25 minutes now and say the model doesn't work. No, congratulations. Next story, because that's the point, is that the model is evolving, and the model that they currently adopted doesn't work. So they adopt a new one, and that won't work, and then there'll be a new one.
Yeah.
And at some point there'll be a model that'll work for another 3 weeks, and then there'll be another one. So.
Yeah, that's always like it's always changing. I think that's the thing.
Grinny, did you bring a story, mate? Oh, why are we?
He still has to unmute himself.
Are you muted?
Yeah, he is.
There you go, I've unmuted you.
We should just make our own stories for Greeny.
Okay, so my story, or stories, the micro stories, think of them as like a chocolate box, because it's got a quite, the speech end has got quite heavy in certain points. So I thought I'd lighten it up a little bit. So if I read out my little stories, then you can pick one and I don't know, have some fun with it. That's what I mean. Christ, it's all pretty miserable at the moment. We need a bit of light-hearted. So this is my chocolate box group of stories. So I'm not going to say the word, but. It's Alex, let's go with that. If you tell it to remind you on a Thursday to do the clapping thing, it also claps along with you, which is...
Oh, that's cool. But that is your cool thing, not your story, surely.
No. This is... So I've just got a list of them, really, only short ones.
Okay.
Here's an American story. Scoob. So I'm a massive Scooby-Doo fan, always have been, love it. Yep. It's available, but only in America at the moment, to rent. So when your kids come around or something like that, they want a film to watch, you can rent it for, I think it's 48 hours for about $24. But it's not available in the UK. But I was thinking the next time I see my kids, I could just go via a VPN and Sam in America. That should work. The next one out of my chocolate box. I suppose this one's going to be...
You never know what you're going to get.
You never know what you're going to get.
Especially with you, Greeny. Come on then.
The next one is we did touch on AR for a moment or two. And with the... I look out my window and where I live, it's like virtually in a wood surrounded by trees. And I haven't got a clue what they are.
Scooby-Doo again?
No, no.
Would you have got away with it? I knew those pesky kids.
Well, yeah, the devils was there. So I bought a book that tells you what all the trees are. But I haven't got a... I mean, how can you find... I mean, they all look the same. They're all green and a bit of wood in the middle. And you can't...
Large.
Leaf shapes. That's brilliant.
You can't figure out which is which. But here's a perfect example of, say, artificial intelligence that you could hold your phone or whatever device and it would tell you what type of tree you're looking at. I sort of half mind to do that myself, develop it.
I think that app already exists.
Does it?
Yeah, I don't remember the name, but I remember like last couple of years, like there was an app like that.
It's probably called Larch, but without the A.
There's actually an application. Now, I know about this application because it's been advertised on Instagram where you can download it. And I think it's $2.99. You hold your phone over the leaf and there's like an outline that shows up. And as long as your leaf is in that outline, it'll tell you what the bush is.
Oh, wow. That's, you see,
there you go.
Here's another one for if you're stuck at home and you're
I just bored. Want to point out Bob Beach is saying, why haven't we got a link for Greeny's story? And I'm like, are you kidding? Greeny's brain has no idea what he's going to say next.
The next one, if you're a geek like all of us, probably listening and at home, is I love old computers. And I got this today, Avaya. 30 quid off eBay.
Nice.
30 quid off eBay. And
does
I
it
think,
work?
Yeah,
it works. Nice. Have you submerged it in water yet to see if it works?
No, I haven't done that yet. But it's so I've formatted it. It comes with Windows 7, but I thought I'd put Linux on it. And so there you go. That's my chocolate box. So you've got to pick one that you really like.
But they're all delightful. Great story, Greening. Well done.
Okay.
Thanks, man. My story is Jeff Bezos. So it was reported yesterday that on current projections, Jeff Bezos will be a trillionaire by 2026.
Who's Jeff Bezos?
Finger on the pulse, sure. Greeny.
No, I genuinely don't know who he is.
He's the guy that owns Amazon.
Oh, well, yeah, please, yeah.
So which is Bezos. A big online shopping company.
Yeah, you can get books from there about trees.
Yeah, I got one. That's where my book came from. But
well, Jeff sold it, you mate. There's the thing. Jeff Bezos sold you your book on Amazon. Yeah, projection shows that Bezos is reaching trillionaire status by 2026. The projection is based on taking the average percentage of yearly growth for the past 5 years, applying it to the future 5 years, and the projection has sparked anger on Twitter, noting how many people are financially struggling during the current epidemic that Bezos rakes in billions of dollars. There's something about he makes $200 billion a second or $2 million a second. This is some ridiculous figure.
Well, I hope he's using his money wisely and
he's not...
Good luck to him.
No.
Well, most of it went
going
in divorce.
To pay alimony.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right?
Because of that dick pic.
Mm-hmm. He took a picture of his willy.
No, he got caught shagging someone else. So his wife divorced him. I have that a little bit inaccurate. So don't sue me, please, Jeff. You don't need the money.
We could have had a comparison between his is probably pink and mine is purple.
So despite the fact his missus is ripping him senseless because of the fact he did his indiscretion, he's still going to be a trillionaire by 2026.
Jesus.
Disgust.
Does anyone need that much money?
No.
Well, the larger conversation I wanted to have here is I don't think there is a need to discuss Jeff's finances. But I think you've got some of the issues around Buffett, some of the issues around Bill Gates, which Bill Gates has kind of deferred a little bit by his trusts and his egalitarian issues. Again, Zuckerberg is in a similar situation, but again, he's donated an awful lot to charities, tried, and I think it probably was done for tax reasons and for the purposes of fending off the judgment. But certainly with Bezos and Buffett, there is a definite instance of people saying, sorry, it's time for managed capitalism now. The tech market has gone so far that it is obscene for people to be worth this amount. There has to be a control whereby there's a spread. And one of the other problems that you've got with Apple is that Apple is so high in their share price, because that's what they get paid to do by their shareholders, if you like. But the way that they've maintained themselves is because of the fact that they've sucked in monies into an economy that they've then constrained. So the reason the rest of the earth is poor is because you've got several people that have got large amounts of money that they're holding as a war chest to fend off hostile takeover and that kind of stuff. But actually, it's taking money out of the rest of the world's economy. Bob can jump in at any time on this story, by the way.
There's what's the Tesla guy? What's his name?
Oh, Elon Musk.
He's a different Tesla fish entirely, isn't he?
He's mad as a bloody atter. I find him quite funny, really.
His brother is very famous here in Boulder, Kimball.
All right.
He owns several restaurants in Boulder. And I'll be like walking around downtown, and Kimball will drive by in his blue Tesla, because of course he drives a Tesla.
Of course. Good lad. Sure. Good brother.
Yeah.
He's just opened he's just opened up the Tesla factory again, isn't he?
Yes, he did.
But I think the difference between Tesla and Bezos is Bezos has generally got the money. I mean, one of the things I remember seeing a program on Alan Sugar, and they were talking about him being a billionaire, and he said they said, so, you know, do you revel in the fact that you're a billionaire? He went, well, no. He said, but the difference between me and other people who say they're billionaires is I could write you a check for £100 million now and it wouldn't bounce. And that was the kind of, now I reckon if you look at the difference between Musk and Bezos, I reckon Bezos is that guy. He could write a check for £100 million and it's going nowhere. He could write a check for $10 billion and it's going nowhere. You're going to get your money. Whereas I don't think Elon Musk has got two pennies to rub together. He's got personal money, don't get me wrong. But in terms of being a businessman, everything he's got is about venture capital and people. And I think the world is shitting itself over Elon Musk, because I think he's in a deep poo pool. Yeah. And he's so far into that credit line that the world is shitting itself rather than him shitting itself.
That's the reason he's had to open up again for manufacturing of his cars, isn't it? Because he would have gone bust otherwise.
Yeah, he's been going bust since he started.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, no, but I mean, if you look at like how wealth has increased for the top, like even 0.5% over the last 15, 20, 30 years, even longer. There's definitely a massive inequality, and I think the question is definitely valid. Like, should any one person or one company have this much money?
Like, but then you'll just get people finding ways of hiding it so that they don't cross the threshold. So.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's
the thing is, in the days of the early days of the Industrial Revolution, you had all the mill owners were essentially squillionaires, but they had the foresight to go, oh, look, all my workers are living in hovels. I know, I think I'll use my money and build a town so they can live in, you know, somewhere clean, and I get better workers. And
The Cadbury model works brilliantly in Bourneville.
They all just did this off their own bat. No one had to tell them to do it. They just did it.
Yeah.
And that's all been forgotten. It's a shame.
We'd pay you in company scrip. So then you were...
Famously, what was it? The Guinness Brewery used to incentivize its cleaning staff, so cleaning the vats out where from all the yeast, it's an unpleasant job and it stinks. And they said, just get the job done, and if you get it job done quicker, you can go down and drink as many pints of Guinness until the end of your shift.
That's much better than company script, because you're getting something of value for it, as opposed to being caught in the company's own economic loop.
Mm-hmm. I always knew Guinness was healthy. I knew you could live on it. Totally. There's a comment here from Bob, which I'd love to, I'm going to read it out because I can read, but whether I understand it or not, it's a different thing entirely. It's just a reflection of the massive increase in inequality in all major economies since the advent of neoliberal economic policies starting in the 1980s. Discuss. Yeah, that's a doctorate right there, isn't it?
Thatcher's Britain, that's what it is.
Yeah, Reagan's trickle-down economics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did he start that? Did he start trickle-down, or was that Nixon?
No, that was a Reagan thing.
That was Reagan, yeah.
Oh, right, okay.
That has been Nixon. Disproven, like, I would say, pretty massively, and we're still talking about it in the U.S.
It just trickles offshore, doesn't it?
It trickles into their own bank accounts. Yeah,
exactly. That's the thing. It trickles into, like, very few people's hands, and that's it.
Bob, why? How can we always have these economic discussions when we're all a bunch of complete idiots? Yeah, and you're sat in the chat room. You should be dialing in here, mate, and putting us right on it. You wait, it'll be in a sec.
That would be cool. I would be interested in that.
You got the link, mate. It's the last time you've dialed in. Just come on, dial in. Just do it. Give us a lesson in economics, quickly.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
Before the end of the show. Actually, no, we're going to go over time if we do that. What I love about the fact is that he's not typed another thing now for 5 minutes, which means he's effectively dropped the mic.
Yeah, he's like...
Oh, right, I'll put this one in, and then I'm done, you twats.
he schooled us.
He's not on screen either. Yeah, he
did. Oh, are you all right, Greeny?
Yeah, no, he turned us.
He's gone to bed.
Oh, he's all right. Yeah, you're all right. He's okay. Can't hear you, mate. You're still on mute. I've unmuted you, don't worry.
I don't mean to feel sorry for myself, but I stiffen up, as it were. The old leg goes a bit.
I'm not surprised.
Your leg, thank God.
Mate. I'm not surprised. Well, no, I like like economics as well, mate.
It's I have to give it a bit of a stretch.
So we are talking about your leg again, yeah?
There's the title, Stiffening Up During Economics.
Yeah.
It goes purple and needs a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, there have been, like, on the U.S. side, there have been tweets going around that the minimum wage in the U.S. hasn't changed in, I don't know how long, 20 years? It's still $7 and something, $7.25. So while all the wages have increased for top managers and, like, wealth has increased and so on, minimum wage is still $7. And a lot of people still earn that. Like, it's not that it's like a far-fetched thing.
The separation, that's what he's talking about, the massive growth in inequality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, Bob. You have dropped the mic because we have nothing else to talk about now. You've made us realize how inept we are. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you.
This podcast and all the others is supported and brought to you by a couple of people that really matter to us. TSO Host is the first one. We love them to bits. They are seriously important to us. And a couple of weeks ago, you guys were great. You actually got out on the socials and started saying thanks to TSO Host for supporting @British Tech. Made a world of difference. Now, their social team really interact with people who look after us really, really well. So if you get out there on the socials and you start saying things, they will retweet you. They will engage with you, send you back some animations and stuff like that. They're a great bunch, absolutely fantastic bunch of lads. So get yourself on there, and ladies, get yourself on there and tweet out @TSO Host, thanks for supporting @British Tech, and you'll get some feedback from them. It'll be good, good fun. If you'd like to buy anything, great. They've got WordPress stuff. They've got VPS, VPN, hosting, dedicated servers, managed servers. They've got everything you want. Just go to their website at tsohost.com and buy what you need. Get into the checkout and type in BTN20, and you'll get 20% off your hosting services from them. Thanks very much to them, because we wouldn't be able to do the show without them. Two big servers that eat up all the data and give us unlimited bandwidth, and they're superb. The other one is IMN Max. They are an important firm to us as well. They are keen supporters of the network. And if you've got anything with an Apple logo on it, they will fix it. Even if you haven't got an Apple logo on it, they might have a try. And if you've got any data that you've lost on any device, whether it's got Apple on it or not, they'll also help you recover that data. They do refurbished machines as well. So if you're looking for something for the kids, just do a bit of email, a bit of schoolwork. They'll have a 3 or 4 year old MacBook Pro or a 3 or 4 year old iMac, and it'll be perfect for what they want to use it for. It's not a high-end gaming platform, but that's never been the case anyway. At the moment, they've got some 3 year old, I think 3 or 4 year old iMacs. At about 700 quid. So go and check out the website, look through what they've got as a refurbished item, and go and sort them out. They also will give you a warranty. So you get a 6 month warranty minimum with a refurbished item, and you also get a 6 month warranty minimum. They do go up to a year though on repairs as well to your phones and iPads and all that kind of stuff. Again, get yourself out on the Twitters and say thanks to at IMN Max for supporting at British Tech. Time for the cool thing. Start us off, Mr. Dabs.
Oh, B. All right. I have two cool things of dubious morality and one cool thing, which is probably cool, but a bit dull.
Okay, so go for
I
it.
I thought I might just sandwich them.
You do realise that the person in charge of dubious morality is Jeff, so you are vying for his job here.
Okay, so I'll put a link in. It's the link I've just put in is actually a WeTransfer download. So I better describe it since you're not going to be able to show it in time. It's a video of a lingerie company called Blue Bella, who obviously couldn't do their catwalk show properly. So they decided to do it over Zoom. So you think, oh, that's interesting. So instead of young models doing the lingerie on the catwalk, they've done it in their own bedrooms. Oh. So if you want to watch a video of some people in lingerie in their own bedrooms, you can download
so if
that.
You want, if you want the links, then you need to go to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and navigate to 2138 on Friday the 15th of May, and you'll be able to download lingerie models prancing around in their own bedrooms in lingerie.
Okay, so my
that's a proper public service.
Yeah,
okay, yeah, you've so been good over the years, I have to say, but he has taken a bit of a biscuit there.
my boring thing of the week, cool thing of the week is a little act called Whisk from Tumult, who until I saw this, I thought they just did an alternative version of Adobe Animate. So you can create, you know, HTML animations using as if it's a graphics package. And anyway, that's what I thought they were for. But apparently they originally started as a program using called Whisk, which was an HTML editor. And the idea is while you're editing, you get essentially a little Safari preview of what you're doing. So you can edit the HTML and the CSS. And as you go, you just see everything update. Now, I know that's hardly unique, but it's a very small program and very focused. And you don't have to have something stupid like you're still watching the video, aren't you?
No, I've only just started it.
Yeah, well, there it is. Okay, so this, it's basically that for about 5 minutes, women mostly undressed. What I was talking about now, though, was this thing called Whisk, which is...
There's one guy there, wait until you conservatory.
Yeah. So people of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah, lady with one leg. Bravo to them.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah. Yeah. I hope you support them all the way to the end of the video several times.
Yeah. Repeatedly.
Shall I do it as well? Because I got crutches and one leg.
Have you got any lingerie there, Will? There's the downfall, perhaps.
Well, I can do my pants. Some.
I've got matching. They do them in matching purple.
Yeah.
This is where Will shows us his swollen foot and we go, nah, that's more like 6 inches, mate.
I reckon I could do that. They didn't ask
Will
me.
Will and his purple knob.
Yeah.
William Bell. And, I think I said what I was going to say about Tumult Whisk. It's a very small, inexpensive, but actually really nifty little HTML editor.
Cool.
So instead of kind of going back and forth to preview in a browser, even if you've got a live link there, it actually, it's all within the same program, so that it uses a bit of Well, you can see what it is there. It's exactly that. But it was small and easy. You don't have to have something stupid like Dreamweaver to do it. Anyway, and my third, which is also of some, what?
Three.
You got three, go on.
Yeah, I'm just going to put the link in now. It's of dubious morality, but it's. I think it's important.
Am I going to be able to show it?
Yes. So coming from a government anyway, you would say it's dubious morality. Someone's come up with a T-shirt that is so ugly, facial recognition will ignore you. It'll assume you are not a person. So they've come up with a way of saying, how does AI recognize people? You know, eyes, nose, mouth and everything. But it's not just floating heads. They recognize what people look like. So they know to look at the face and the head. So if they came up with what AI ignores as not a person, so they've come up with this T-shirt design that persuades these the AI behind the cameras to go, right, it's not a person, I'll ignore that. I've got to get one of those T-shirts.
That's the kind of story you should be picking for a discussion, mate.
Yeah, that would have been a story for this.
That's a cool thing of the week. Now, the thing is, I don't know if that's actually the T-shirt or they just made one up.
I think they made one up. Yeah,
And she's kind of a bit sideways on it. But
you probably can't take a photograph of it.
Yeah, probably not. The AI in your camera won't.
Yeah, your camera won't focus on it. Excellent pick, good man. Thank you very much, Patrice. What have you got for us, mate?
Yeah, I have a TV show. It's actually a second season, or there are two seasons. The show is called Ugly Delicious, and I have to thank Doc for that. He mentioned that on my podcast's first episode. And I've started watching it, and it's super interesting. It's basically David Chang, which some of you might know. He's a very famous chef, and he's doing all kinds of different things. He's he's delivering pizza. He figures out what good pizza means and what good pizza means to different people. And he goes to New York and then he actually goes on a pizza delivery shift for a really big pizza delivery company. And because he wants to figure out what is that about? And how is that pizza and how good is it? And how is it made? And all that. It's a really interesting show.
You
don't need to be a chef to make pizza.
No, you don't. And I said, it is super interesting. And he tries things that he never liked before. Episode 2, you can see here, is about tacos. And he admits that he never liked Mexican food. He hated tacos. And people actually take him and show him what good tacos are about. And he's oh, okay, I'm converted now.
Yeah, but we went out to dinner. With Tom Merritt when I went over there for Macworld, at a place in LA, and I can take or leave Mexican food. Some of it I like, some of it I hate. But in there, what I ate was completely different from anything I'd eaten ever before in my life. Yeah,
That was my experience in Arizona as well. Something we talked about, I think, with Jeff.
Finding a good proper Mexican restaurant.
Yeah,
it's not what you're thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
So
it's the same with Indian food, though. You know, we sit here and say, "Oh, I love curry," but actually, what you're eating is nothing like, nothing like the real thing.
That's true. That is true. Yeah. No, I said, it's a really. I like the title, "Ugly Delicious."
Yeah, no,
it's
good.
A really good. Really,
I might
good
give
show.
That a go. Definitely.
Can I go next? Because I'm sort of stiffening up.
No worries, mate. Go for it. And then tell us who you are at the end and where we can find you and stuff.
So mine isn't a cool thing. I suppose in some ways it's a non-cool thing. My neighbor, who's a very talented illustrator and author, was using InDesign. And she quit it. And on her desktop, when she hasn't got a backup, was all of her work. Gigabytes, you know, books and illustrations and all of that. She quit InDesign and all of the files off the desktop just vanished like that. Bang. Gone. And I have done everything. I'm a certified Apple engineer, and I've gone into it with Linux and to see if there some sort of virus is cloaking them, and that's no good. I've tried quite a few different antivirus pieces of software on there, and I'm stumped. I'm you know, I've booted off my Mac to look at it. I've got an old version.
You're on mute, mate, I think, again.
Yeah, Adobe shut him down. They're like, yeah, we don't want you talking about that.
I think so.
No, I shouldn't.
No, you're back now. That's
you're back.
Audio
you're back.
Interface cut out, I think.
So really, what I'm asking is, there's obviously a lot of geeks out there. So if you've got any advice, so give me a few clues, because I've tried, as far as I know, I've tried absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So my email address is will@britishmac.com. That's will@britishmac.com.
What platform is she on, PC or Mac?
Mac.
Yeah. Try
okay. Well, I'd start with the I'm in Macs boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm wondering if somehow the files were maybe on her Creative Cloud storage.
Tried that.
What she had, so it wasn't like aliases on the desktop and they went away.
No, we've done that. What do they call it? iCloud, because it was syncing the desktop to iCloud.
Mm-hmm.
But the files aren't on iCloud either.
Mm-hmm. Creative Cloud.
Both. So Creative right. Cloud and iCloud.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
I spent hours on it because this stuff is really, really valuable to it. Mm. And, you know, months of work just gone in seconds.
No, great. I hope we can get some help for you. If you're out there and you know anything then about InDesign, or if you've come across this issue before, then please get in touch with Will at britishmac.com.
That's Gloria would be one option, I think.
And that's the contact details for you as well, isn't it, mate?
Mm.
At British Mac on Twitter, and Will at British Mac if you want to email.
Brilliant. I'm going to sign off now.
Yeah, go for you, mate. Take care. See you soon.
Okay. Bye. Cheers.
Jeffrey, what have you got for us, mate?
My cool thing is a follow-up to the discussion about me turning a Raspberry Pi into a Plex server, which were you here for that, Ewan?
Yeah, I don't remember. Discuss it last
that
week.
Was last no. week.
Oh, that was last week? Mm-hmm. Okay. So... So I took a Raspberry Pi 4 and connected a USB 3 external drive that I just had sitting around I wasn't using, connected it up to that, installed Plex server on the Raspberry Pi, and now it's serving up media.
I'm guessing it got rather hot, though.
Well, it was warm, but it didn't feel any hotter than any other Raspberry Pi that I've put into use. But I thought having a fan on this would be good. And it turns out the Raspberry Pi 4, you can't use a Raspberry Pi 3 case on it because the cutouts for the ports don't line up. Mm-hmm. So I went on the hunt for a fan case for a Raspberry Pi, and I found this one for $12. And it showed up actually yesterday. And so I put the whole thing together, have the Raspberry Pi in it, and it's a nice little case.
Yeah.
It, you know, it includes heat sinks, which was nice. The fan is super quiet.
Nice.
And putting the whole thing together was easy. It's interesting because it's layers. And so you start with the bottom layer, then you put this black spacer layer on, then this clear layer that holds the Pi in place, and then the next layers that start wrapping around the ports to keep everything jiggling, and then you get to a layer where you've actually attached the fan, and then finally you get the top layer that goes on. So it's a process putting it together, but it's not difficult. And once it was done, it looks really nice. And now I have a Raspberry Pi Plex server sitting on the shelf.
Very
and it's
good.
Working great.
Excellent.
So, but the way they did the cutout on this for the ports, I believe, well, no, that's not true. I'm not sure about the end where the USB ports are, if it would work, but the cutout on the side where you get at the power port and the dual HDMI ports, that cutout I think would work for a Pi 3 as well.
Good.
No, but yeah, good thing. $12 and, yeah, it's, and it's a nice little case.
I'm going to get derided heavily for my cool thing because I actually didn't install this years ago after I had a real bad episode with it. And immediately afterwards, Will Green came on and complained constantly about the fact that he was having major issues with it. So I never put it back on as a result until yesterday. And that's Plex. And you're going to go, you're an idiot. But I'm sorry, in the early days, Plex was an absolute pain in the arse trying to get it off your computer.
I agree completely.
Yes.
And it turned me off it completely. You can say, oh, well, it's great. You can see all your content. I could do streaming from my Mac Mini across to my Apple TV. I didn't need Plex. And I'd heard so many bad stories. It was just like, stuff it, stick it up your ass. I'm not interested. And then I talked to Rob a couple of days ago, GB Redneck in the chat room, and said, I'm going to set up the Mac Mini again because I've got all my Mini movies and it's a pain that I can't watch them. He said, go with the Plex server. Just take one of the Synologies that you've got and use that. Mm-hmm. So I did. I got one of the 216 Synologies that I got and I transferred all the data. I've got so much of it. It took me 14 hours to transfer all the data off the hard drive onto the Synology. But now it's sitting purring away behind me. But all the Apple TVs in the house, the Apple TV at my dad's house is set up to access it. And my phone's set up to access it. I've put the application on Bryony's iPad, Bryony's phone, Ellis's phone, Sharon's phone, my phone. So I can watch all of our content anywhere in the world. There's 30,000 songs on there that were all mine, and they are all mine from CDs that I ripped. And there's also a pile of pictures on there that we can all have a look at. So, and I've shared my server with Rob and Muller, so because they shared me with theirs. And it's great. It's great. I'm a bit of an idiot when it comes to setting stuff up, but I set it up in a heartbeat. It was dead easy. The only thing I had to do at the end was I was getting trouble with some of the streams, and Rob just came on, did a screen share with me and said, oh no, you need to uncheck that. And then it worked absolutely perfectly. So thanks to Rob for doing it. And yeah, really, really impressed with Plex. It's claimed from the first time that I used it when it was horror show, absolute horror show.
Yep.
You and I was in the same boat. And I tried Plex early on and thought there's no reason why I would ever want to use this.
It was a pile of, it was white steaming dog shit.
Yeah.
From the 70s.
But people were, you know, friends that I respect their opinion were telling me, no, Plex is cool now. Hmm. And so I thought, all right, well, that'll be a fun project. So that's why I did it on the Raspberry Pi. And I am so pleasantly surprised.
Streamed beautifully as well.
So my little Raspberry Pi Plex server, it's sitting on top of my Synology, which is totally capable of running Plex. But, you know, whatever. This is cool. It's working. And
The cool thing is you can even have multiple Plex servers. Like if you want to, like the apps are fully multi-server compatible or capable.
So you could have a backup running on your Synology.
You could have even different libraries and simply like you can configure your home screen and simply say, okay, this from this server, this from that server, and like have everything in there. Like you can access anything you want.
Yeah.
It's actually
it's good. Cool. I'm well impressed. Well impressed. Where can we get a hold of you, Alistair?
Well, I'm on Twitter, Ali Dabs. If you want to go to the register, theregister.co.uk, search for my name, just search for Dabs. No one else in the world is called Dabs.
I've never met anyone called Dabs, I have to say.
And you should find about 7 or 8 years worth of my weekly columns there. So if you've got nothing else to do while looking, you can read those.
Excellent. Patrice, where would you be?
Well, I am here every week on the Mac Show and the Big Show, also today. Everything I do is on thepatrice.com. And also this time, I wanted to mention the podcast I just started a couple of weeks ago. Episode 6 is out. A podcast is called Foodie Flashback, Food and Memories, where we talk about food and food-related memories, like where you came from, like what food you like, how you started cooking, like you name it. And I've had some really cool people on, like Ewan, like Jeff. Latest episode is actually with Melissa, the Mac Mommy. It was super interesting because she had like an Italian upbringing, and it was very interesting to see like how some things were very similar in my family and like what she experienced, like the Saturday pasta, or in her case it was Sunday pasta, that I had to endure every week for years and years and years. And we talked also a little bit about like adapting to changing health and to the quarantine now. So it's a really, really cool episode. It's out now. So head over to foodieflashback.com.
Excellent. Jeff, where would you be?
I'm over at textexpander.com, and on Twitter and Instagram, I am Jay Gamut, and I'm on all kinds of podcasts. Of course, The Mac Show and The Big Show. And I did a beginner webinar yesterday for Text Expander. Next one is coming up in 2 weeks. So anyone that wants to learn more about Text Expander, sign up. It's free. And I'm like your personal Text Expander tutor.
Excellent, Mike. Thank you very much. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow us at the network at British Tech. We're going to have back in the studio next week, definitely. It's at the end of a Zoom era for a while. If we can make Zoom work down at the office properly, then we might have a go, but we're going to go back to Skype, and hopefully good audio, hopefully easily done, and hopefully green screen back and all the usual bells and whistles and stuff. So it's been an interesting 6 weeks of lockdown, though. So thank you very much to Zoom for letting it happen, because otherwise we'd have done no shows at all. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.